Good morning, Pathways. So everybody online watching, either later or from a different country, I know I just broke the rules on a multicultural, multinational church. I'll ask for your forgiveness. Today is the July 4th weekend, and so the wordle for today is loyal. And this one threw me for all sorts of loops because I got caught between two competing desires. When you go to seminary, they have a class called Preaching Lab, and you have to preach, and they tell you how to preach, and then all the pastors give you the real stuff of what a good preacher is, and it's basically, don't put filters between you and your congregation. For example, about a month ago, I changed my hairstyle just to see what it would be like, and one beloved Pathways members came up and looked at my, and hey, my eyes are down here. And she just kept looking at my hair and like, you lost a little pizzazz from when you're preaching, your hair is down. It's like, when did my hair become a filter for the word of God? And this goes towards everything. You know, am I wearing, are my clothes too colorful? Is my car too broken down? Do I have a giant zit on my nose? Like, the worst one is, do I reveal my political stance? I try as hard as I can, and I don't know if I'm actually doing it well or not. I try as hard as I can to hide from you what my political stance is, so as not to have that filter, that obstacle between you and me. So I've always been taught, keep that hidden. But I'm also a student ministries pastor, and we have to talk about relevant things and things going on right now. And given the past couple weeks of Supreme Court decisions and other decisions made, we have to talk about it. Otherwise, we risk being an irrelevant church. And so I'm stuck between, oh man, this is so dangerous. I'm just a student ministries pastor. I didn't know you could bring in a missionary to guest speak. That's a new rule that we're going to take advantage of in the weeks to come. So, let's talk about this. Let's talk about loyalties. Let me ask you a couple questions. Raise your hands. How many of you would consider yourselves loyal to Jesus? Nod, raise your hand. If you're searching God, there's no pressure here. That's fine. Everyone's on their own trajectory, their own journey. How many of you would consider yourselves loyal to the United States of America? And again, I know I'm talking to a multinational audience, and that's okay. Loyal to your own country, that's fine. How many of you would consider yourselves loyal to your personal financial stewardship? That's a loyalty like you try to maintain and hold, and some of you are like, nope, I don't care. I see something I want and I buy it. We have some classes and workshops for you on financial stewardship. How many of you, last one, how many of you would consider yourselves loyal to the well-being of others? Someone's in need, someone's hurting, you're going to help. Excellent. If you didn't raise your hand there, we're just going to pray for you. That's okay. What happens when those particular loyalties are put into conflict with each other? I'll tell you a little story. Here's a case study and illustration. What happens when you hit a yellow light? And now you have some competing loyalties. How many of you, it's okay, this is safe space. Go ahead and confess. How many of you speed up? Because you're trying to avoid a ticket? Because you have a loyalty to your financial stewardship? It's basically an unwritten rule in the U.S. If you're watching from out of you, if you see yellow light, you go faster. How many of you take action? Sometimes it's slow down, sometimes it's speed up, but the cause is different. The cause is you are trying to avoid an accident. And so you take action. You either slow down or speed up because you can see an accident's about to happen, and so you do that. It has nothing to do with the finances. You just don't want to have an accident. Someone might get hurt. Maybe that's a well-being of others. That's your loyalty. Or your beautiful car could get damaged and your insurance premiums go up, and then you back your financial stewardship. You see how these loyalties kind of work out. Perhaps some of you have such a strong relationship with Jesus. You see that yellow light. You think of the verses that talk about giving to Caesar what is Caesar's. You think about Jesus and all his obedience, and you obey that yellow light, and you do the safest, most lawful thing. Go ahead and raise your hands. We would like to applaud you and just apply for you for sainthood right now. Even though we're Baptist, it's fine. I thought of one last category. If your first instinct is to look around for cops, we're just going to let you wrestle through what that means for yourself. Whatever you're loyal to, or rather, more precisely, whatever political stance you're loyal to, I believe Jesus wanted us to discourse and engage through our differences in such a way that points others into a relationship with him. Whatever our rights or beliefs or political stance, I believe Jesus wanted us to engage each other with the hope of truly connecting and building intentional community instead of shouting at each other or blasting at each other online or another format or just saying things out in the void and creating dissension and just getting things off your chest. I believe that Jesus was certainly not about expressing, internalizing any forms of hate or racism or sexism or creating enemies of each other. Because we all collectively have one enemy, and its name is Satan, who loves to sow dissent and discord among us. Today, I hope to remind you that Jesus never gave us step 2 or step 3 or step 12. He always gave us only ever step 1, being confident that the best way to live was to be more like him in this one step today. So what do? When our rights, when the laws, when our faith don't intersect in clean ways? What do? When we strongly and vehemently disagree with the laws and or each other? I was talking with a friend of mine, and he reminded me, or he showed me a survey by a Pew, I guess the Pew surveys, the survey group. They did a study of the political parties, and they said, when these sides are in disagreement, one side thinks the other is immoral, and the other side thinks the other one is unintelligent. And the study was, how do you find middle ground? If you're calling each other unintelligent or immoral, and it just goes back and forth, you're dumb, you're evil, you're not so smart, you're wicked. Like, there's no, how do you find the way through that? When the laws, our rights, and our faith intersect in a way that causes conflict. We find Jesus and his disciples in just such a predicament in Luke chapter 22. This passage caught me by surprise. This is Jesus. It's in the last days. He's walked with his disciples. They've had the Last Supper. Only he knows it's been the Last Supper. And he knows what's about to happen. And his soul is heavy. Jesus needs his brothers and sisters. And he's worried about them. He knows he's about to go. And he has that thing that we all have when we send our children off, when we send our students off, when we send off a grad. Have we taught them everything they need to know? Have they got it all? Are they ready? And in this passage, Jesus knows already that he's lost one. And so he tells his followers, he tells his beloved disciples, these whom he loves, these men and women whom he loves and cherishes and adores and has walked with them for years, you guys got to pray. You got to pray. I know it's late. You got to pray. Verse 45 is where we start. He rose from prayer and he goes back to the disciples and he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. Why are you sleeping? He asked them. Get up and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. I find that last phrase particularly interesting. Pray so that you will not fall. I mean, I don't know what time it was, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. I'm not sure they heard what he was saying. But it's not, hey, pray for me. That's what I would have expected Jesus to be saying. Pray for what's about to happen. He tells them, pray so that you don't fall into temptation. Because he cannot tell them what's about to happen. He just has to train them as much as he can to remain in constant sync with the Father, to endure and to handle whatever comes without falling in temptation. This event that's about to happen, the day after that, the week after that, the month after that, the year after that, keep praying. Don't fall in temptation. No matter what happens, you got to stay connected to the Father. We all know this episode of history. The disciples failed in doing what Jesus asked of them. And we turn our gaze to ourselves. And we can hold no moral high ground. We're in the same boat as the disciples. In both the Old and the New Testament, it repeats several times, there is no one righteous, not even one. And so we come to our first point. Everyone is falling short of what Jesus asks of us. No one has any right to claim the moral high ground in politics. No matter where you stand politically, you can find something in the Bible that can be interpreted to support your position. If you're on the right, if you're on the left, if you're in the middle, if you're somewhere over there, you are probably sourcing your position off of something you know of Jesus and the Bible. How does it work when all the sides involved are saying, Jesus is on our side? Well, you see, he's actually on our side. Oh, you mean my side? It's fruitless to claim the moral high ground. By all means, the Bible should be our first resource for direction and guidance in all issues, not just political. But to claim that God is only on one side of the issue, or that this side of the issue is more important, is probably untrue. Point two, Jesus chose obedience and compassion. The passage continues in verse 49. When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, and in my mind, I think of these guys reaching for swords, or they didn't have guns, reaching for swords. Like, they're getting ready, like, oh, this is the moment. This is the moment we've been training for. We've been looking to defend our Jesus. He's the Savior. He's going to deliver us. This is the moment. This is why we are here. We are going to defend our beloved Jesus. And they're reaching for whatever they can get. Maybe even some of them said, finally, this is why I'm here. Lord, should we strike with our swords? And then one of them, and from other passages we know it was Peter. Oh, this guy. He struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. Which is kind of an odd swing. Like, how do you... I mean, he's a fisherman. What's he do with a sword? Like, how do I use this thing? And the poor religious servant just like, what's going on? Oh, my ear. That's a weird scene. And Jesus answered, no more of this. And I imagine his tone reverberated and everyone stopped. And he touched Malchus's ear, the religious guy. And he touched Malchus's ear and healed him. In light of today's lens, did the disciples have the right to bear arms? I was studying, I was watching another preacher talk about the right to bear arms, and he showed his bare arms. Is that how bare arms? He misspelled it on the screen. And then he said, well, let me spell it the right way. And bear, like a bare arms. He goes, huh, bare arm. I just, it's a serious issue. But you get a dumb joke like that in my head, and I can't let go of it. All right. Did disciples have the right to bear arms? Even though it was 2,000 years ago and a very different context? Yes, they did. Did the disciples have the right to use those weapons? Well, that's a little trickier. Thankfully, I found a shortcut. I found an answer. The answer is, I couldn't find any scholar or commentary or study guide, nothing that answered that question. So I assume that I am the only one in the universe who has ever asked that question, so it must not be important. We can skip it. But we know that Jesus certainly disagreed with the action. Whether they had the right to or not, Jesus was certainly displeased. Jesus chose compassion in healing the religious leader's ear. And look a little deeper. Jesus also chose the compassion of obedience. Even though he had the authority and the power and the righteousness to defy the situation. In the other gospel account, he turns to, do you not think that I can't call down the host of angels to defend me? Put away your sword, little boy. And furthermore, he's Jesus. He lived a sinless life. He knows he stands clean of whatever they're about to charge him of. And he knows that whatever they're going to charge him with is just a trumped up charge. But yet he chooses obedience out of compassion for all of us. He chose the well-being of all involved instead of his rights. And we're reminded of this Philippians passage, that ancient hymn, the oldest hymn we know of, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. Jesus chose to honor the imago Dei of everyone involved, the dignity of personhood of everyone there, instead of being right. I learned that lesson from my marriage. I don't think she's right, but Sonia will often say to me, Jonathan, you can't be right all of the time. I don't think she's right about that, but I mean, I could choose to be right in that moment, or I can say, well, that's maybe true. I don't, for the sake of my marriage, I will, okay, yeah. I could stand on my right of rightness and win that battle, or not. In my own head, I've won that battle. But in reality, I've lost the battle, and I've lost the war, and it's going to cost me a whole bunch, you know. How often do you get involved in that situation where it's important that you're right and you forget the person across from you is someone you should be trying to care about, someone you should be trying to love, someone you should be trying to represent Jesus to. What would our political discourse look like if compassion for the person across from you, if compassion was the undeniable tone? If someone can walk away from that discussion with you saying, well, I mean, we disagree, but I really feel like they love me. I really feel like they really tried to hear. I really feel like they tried to see my position, my point. I feel seen, I feel known, I feel heard. What would our political discourse look like if we sacrificially gave up our rights and the goal of being right for the well-being of that person? And I know that what's going on today in the news, in our government, these are big issues. I am not making light of them. I am not treating them carelessly. I know that these are huge issues. And to give sacrificially, depending on your stance, I can't even imagine what that might look like. But to give up my right in that situation for the well-being of someone else. How many bridges have been burned and doorways closed because we planted our flag on this issue or this issue or this issue, and we closed the door to the gospel for everyone who heard us say it? I know I researched a bunch of these messages and sermons from around, from pastors I respect and preachers I respect. And I know that these sermons sound light and sometimes trite. But all we have is Jesus' example. And here, Jesus chose sacrificial obedience, and he gave up his rights, and he acted in compassion toward his opponent, because that person wasn't his opponent. Point three. Even though obedient, Jesus challenged the leaders in their wrongness. The passage continues in verse 52. I imagine he's in handcuffs or whatever, served as handcuffs for the day. And he's walking out, and he says to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who had come for him. Note the description. It's not the Roman soldiers. It's not the occupying government. He's talking to his fellow religious leaders, those who should be going after the same goal he's going after, those who know the same texts he knows, those who are just interpreting it in a way that serves themselves, or maybe it serves itself. Some of these religious leaders cared about the rightness of the law more than the people for whom it's supposed to serve. He says to them, am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs? Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me. But this is your hour when darkness reigns. And if I were in that moment with him, I would not want to be looking at his face when he said those last three words. What's his face look like? Is he angry? Is he sad? Our theology teaches us that he loved and cared for these leaders. They didn't care so much for him. He didn't care for what they were doing. But he never wrote anyone off. The leaders had ruled and acted in an unjust manner. Jesus' arrest was not in any way just or justified. Yet he still submitted. And he commanded his followers to submit as well. Not just those 12, not just the 72, not just the early church, all of us. But Jesus challenged the injustice. I think that's what he was trying to do. I don't know if he was trying to leave these guys and like one last, let me give you one last try. I'm going to say this. You guys didn't need to bring clubs and swords. I've been with you every day. Why this way? Why now? Why at all? I want to know what these guys went home and reflected on and thought about. I want to know how his tone affected them. If their heart was hard, nothing he could do. And so was he just throwing one last jab? Which seems un-Jesus-like. Fine, you can take me away, but. I mean, these words don't seem offensive. They don't seem an insult. They don't seem fiery. They don't seem an exaggeration. They don't seem arrogant. They don't seem proud. They don't seem any of the ways that we do when we disagree. It's a question. And depending on the tone, depending on the volume, was he yelling at them? Or was this spoken in sorrow? But he did speak. And it's a model of how to confront. It's a model of what protest looks like. He didn't demonize them. He didn't make them you versus me. He's not calling them names. He's not writing them off. He's not creating a separation or divide. My guess is that he was crying one last time. Come on, guys. Get it. Get this. So, we're all falling short. No one has the moral high ground in politics. If we follow Jesus' example, we know that he chose obedience and compassion. And yet, he gives us the right and the model of how to challenge and how to protest when it is unjust. So we come to my favorite part. What if? If you are looking for a church where everyone agrees politically, this is not that church. We intentionally are diverse in every way we can think of. We have members solidly in every political stance, intentionally. And I hope that we are building and growing in our community, in our classes, in our small groups, in our work groups, in our serving groups, in our discipleship groups. I hope that we are creating a safe space for the various positions to be presented and heard and honestly inquired about. There are people you love who hold a different position than you. I dream of small groups where people leave their lenses and their opinions and their bias and their slant and their lean at the door in the face of their small group member who is experiencing woundedness and injustice because of the issue in play. How wrong would it be for me to slam that person with how wrong they are because I'm right? I'm sorry, why are you crying? Oh, this is personally affecting you. I dream of small groups where no matter the X, Y, or Z, we can hear and see and care for each other. I dream of a pathway that is more than just conversations behind closed doors. More than social media posts. More than just words. The staff, the pastors, we dream of a pathways that is engaging out there in real life, in real ways with those who are affected by the decisions being made by our government. Yes, by all means we should vote. Yes, by all means we should engage our government and our politics. And yes, by all means we should be serving those who need help. Those who are hurting. I dream of visits from new persons who then become members, who then share their stories and their testimonies because we walked alongside them sacrificially, at length, in love, in compassion. Those who saw and found Jesus through our compassion. Even if we held a political position that was different. I believe that Jesus wanted us to be loyal to our great nation. To vote and join in the governmental processes, to encourage our students to become clerks and administrators and lawyers and judges and politicians so that they can care for the people of this nation at that level. I believe that we should encourage those in law enforcement and those in military and celebrate their service and sacrifice for us. I believe that we should be engaged in the news and cultural events. I just think Jesus wanted us to engage each other and our government by the same rules of loving and honoring God first, and then in the same way, loving our neighbor, our opposing political party members, as ourselves. To go further, there's some discussion prompts either for your meditation or for your discussion. They're in the YouVersion app. You can at home just click on that link on the computer, or here, just click on the YouVersion app and get to the events and find that link to the discussion questions. Or if you receive our emails, then you have that email waiting for you. And if you don't receive our emails and you would like to, let us know. Use that connection card. In the meantime, let me pray. Sometimes, God, I have to confess, it's really annoying that so many of your answers come down to, do you love the Lord your God? Do you love your neighbor as yourself? And we confess, God, as a church, as individuals, how often we come up short. How often we react from fear. How often we react from arrogance and pride. How often we forget that our only goal as your church is to lead others to you. That doesn't mean giving in to what we think is wrong. It doesn't mean being a doormat. It doesn't mean giving up on battles that should be fought. But the way that we fight them, the way that we love others through them, The way I fight that battle, God, I think is what you're trying to tell us. You have doors and windows and pathways and cracks and all sorts of ways for us to get your name and your presence out there. Father, would you help us, your church, to be known in this nation as those who love, as those who forgive, as those who need forgiveness, as those who have been forgiven, as those who are for this and for this and for this. We cry out, God, it sometimes just seems so hard. And so today we decide to take a step forward. Today being a holiday weekend, probably a holiday weekend where we see our family members, God, probably a holiday where we're gonna have a meal together. Probably a meal together where some of these political topics might come up. Father, would you grant each of us incredible humility, incredible wisdom, incredible gentleness, to inquire, to ask, to genuinely seek. What is this person whom I love, whom I care about? How did they come to there? Why do they believe it? I just want to know. I just want to communicate to them that I care. And Father, for those of us who are in first degree positions of being wounded by some of these decisions, who face injustices from some of these decisions, then, I don't know, would you make it known to us, God, so that we, the church, can walk with them, so we can encourage them and cheer them on, that we can support, that we can be you with them. I don't know if this is an idol in our lives, God, but it's an area that we're so uncomfortable with. We need you. Help us to be your church. And all the people of God said, Amen.